Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. Today, everything you always wanted to know about genetically modified foods, but were always afraid to find out. Activist Mickey Z shows brilliantly why they're 1,000 times worse than you think. I hope you'll stay tuned. Spring has sprung, the grass has riz, I wonder where the flowers is. So goes one of the world's finest poems. And, like the government's unemployment statistics, it is a lie. The grass has not riz. It's just lying there, only recently uncovered from the snow, looking quite brown and not at all well. At least the temperature is above freezing today, though not by much. But, if you can believe the calendar, it is spring. And in spring, we New Englanders begin to get back in touch with the natural world. For some of my neighbors, this involves throwing grass seed, chemical fertilizer, and Monsanto herbicides on their lawns, followed by about 150 hours of labor and by 10,000 gallons of water over the next 6 months. As a result, their property will look just as elegant as the Duke of Marlborough's country estate, and passers-by will confuse my neighbor's three-bedroom frame house with Marlborough's Blenheim Palace. Indeed, they've even named a town nearby Marlborough, just to remind residents what they should aspire to when it comes to lawn care. I would grow indigenous wildflowers in my own yard, but I fear the wrath of the town zoning commission. So instead, my lawn is of indigenous crabgrass. It is fertilized only by the white clover that pops up on its own a couple of times over the season. My neighbors have no inkling that clover adds nitrogen to the soil, or even that it is beautiful. So they dump chemicals on their lawn to kill the clover and to kill the crabgrass, and then dump more chemicals to fertilize their depleted soil. Their behavior is considered normal, even public-spirited. Actually, crabgrass is not my first choice for a lawn. I'd rather have a lawn of tomatoes and beans and corn, but my yard is covered in shade. There's not enough sun to grow vegetables. So I settle for God's own economical, organic, non-GMO crabgrass. And I look forward to the appearance of God's own organic, non-toxic fertilizer, the beautiful clover. I don't want to sound too superior here. If my neighbors earn an F for environmental awareness, I'm earning at most a D, as today's talk by Mickey Z will show. Mickey Z is otherwise known as Mike Zazima. He's a writer, blogger, food activist, and animal rights activist, living in Queens, New York City. Last May, there were anti-Monsanto demonstrations worldwide. Mickey spoke at New York's, in Washington Square Park. Mickey Z is a radical. That does not mean wild-eyed crazy man with crackpot ideas. In fact, he comes across as very smart, sane, judicious, deeply knowledgeable, a person who chooses his words carefully. Some of those carefully chosen words, towards the end, I had to bleep out for airplay, when he gets into a little call-and-response number that involves bleep Monsanto, bleep corporate agribusiness, bleep Obama, bleep the alleged two-party system, bleep the system. I happen to think he's right on all counts, and he makes a good case for every one of those conclusions. If he doesn't persuade you, fill in the bleeps with anything you like. Maybe God bless. He talks about lawn care, too, though that doesn't earn its own bleep. He starts out nicely summarizing everything that is wrong with genetically modified crops, GMOs. But GMOs, dreadful as they are just one part of a more dreadful, bigger picture, So he steps back and looks at corporate agribusiness generally. Then he steps back further and looks at the even bigger picture. Raising livestock itself is devastating the planet, and eating meat is really, really bad for 50 different reasons. Then he looks at the still bigger picture. What relationship should a person have with the natural world? And what exactly can anyone do to make that relationship happen? Mickey Z's conclusions are radical, even revolutionary. The darn thing is, they seem so logical and judicious and inevitable and sane. And it's Monsanto and the FDA and McDonald's and the nice ladies of your church's refreshment committee. They're the ones who end up seeming the nutcase psychopaths. Not to mention my neighbors across the street in Blenheim Palace. Recorded live in New York, here's Mickey Z.
So I begin, as always, by saying peace and power to all species. Genetically modified organisms is not a single issue. And unfortunately, on events like this, they kind of get narrowed down to a single issue, a single company in particular. So what I'm going to try and do today is make some really big connections and demonstrate why this issue is really, really helpful in terms of recruiting. Sometimes when you're out interacting with the mainstream and you're talking about the issues that motivate you, they have a hard time relating. They could be a little bit esoteric or maybe too radical. But everybody wants to eat food that's going to nourish them. Nobody wants to be poisoned. So this issue actually has the value of enabling you to connect with people and bring them into the movement, whatever that movement might be. So I'm going to try, and the beginning part of it, fill you in on some just straight out facts, like sort of Monsanto GMO 101, and then connect it to larger issues like veganism, animal rights, and so on, and how we can put this into action day after day. Monsanto is not a food company. It is a chemical company. You want to remember that. It made its name selling saccharin to Coca-Cola and Agent Orange to the U.S. military and things like PCBs, dioxin, DDT, RBGH, and so on. It's a company that has annual net sales of close to $12 billion, has over 400 facilities across the globe in 66 countries on six continents, and its products are grown on nearly 300 million acres worldwide. It is one of three corporations that control 70% of the global seed market, the other two being DuPont and Syngenta. And their goal is monopoly power over our food and our water. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about water, but we can get into that if we have time for Q&A and all. A GMO itself, it stands for genetically modified organisms. And basically, a GMO is the result of when genes are taken from one species and inserted them into another species in an attempt, and the key word is attempt, to obtain a desired trait or characteristic. They're also known as transgenic organisms, and the process also is known as genetic engineering. So in mainstream conversation, the three terms are kind of interchangeable. Some of the madness that these corporate scientists do are inserting human genes into corn, sugar cane, and rice. So we have a little street fair going on over there with a fair amount of corn, sugar cane, and rice. So the odds are these are genetically modified and contain human genes. They've also inserted spider genes into goat DNA in the hope of creating goat milk that contains spider web protein so they can make bulletproof vests. They put Arctic fish genes into tomatoes and strawberries in the hope that they would be tolerant to frost. And they're trying to make potatoes that glow in the dark when they need to be watered. Now, all of this is happening despite the reality that any non-corporate scientist would tell you that our current understanding of DNA is extremely limited. And any change to DNA can result in side effects that are impossible to predict or control. Regardless, even with this knowledge, right now in the U.S., 94% of soy, 90% of cotton, 95% of beets, and 88% of corn is genetically modified. And roughly 80% of the processed foods that we're eating contains at least one genetically modified ingredient. Now, anyone who might be taking some solace in that thinking maybe they're tested, the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, does not test GMOs. They rely on the results of the tests done by the corporations, Syngenta, DuPont, and Monsanto. They rely on that. In fact, They don't require a single safety study for GMOs. They do not mandate labeling, and they allow companies to put GM foods onto the market without even informing the FDA that they're going onto the market. And because of the way corporate science is shaped in this country, it's difficult to prove cause and effect. But GMOs were introduced into our food sources in 1996. Within the first 9 years, the percentage of Americans with at least 3 chronic illnesses increased from 7% to 13%, and food allergies skyrocketed. Now, anyone who might be able to prove that a GMO caused them to have a food allergy would then run up to something new, which is euphemistically called the Monsanto Protection Act. But the actual name of it is the Farmer Assurance Provision of Section 735 of the recent spending bill. It was snuck in. They use the word snuck, but it's not like anyone in Congress really cared, considering the amount of donations, contributions they're getting. But this act says that even if you could prove and bring a case that GMOs are causing food allergies, no action can be taken until something called an environmental impact statement is created. This typically takes years, and it's put together by the same cronies that do all this type of work. It's like the NYPD investigating itself. You know what the result is going to be. So we have this Monsanto Protection Act, but what really needs protection is the environment. So I'm going to touch a little bit on how GMOs impact the environment. Most genetically modified crops are engineered to be what's called herbicide tolerant. The idea is that they choose the toxins over the insects. They say we can douse them with herbicides, but if we create these seeds to grow crops that can tolerate these herbicides, we could use a lot more on it. And Monsanto, in its genius, creates Roundup Ready crops and sells those seeds, and then sells Roundup herbicide, which those crops are specifically created to be tolerant to that specific herbicide. When GMOs were introduced into the food system in 1996, between 1996 and 2008, U.S. farmers promptly proceeded to spray 383 million extra pounds of herbicide on those GMO crops. What happens then is the overuse of these herbicides creates what they call super weeds, which are resistant to the herbicides, and then therefore they have to use even more. And so Monsanto makes even more money when you have to buy even more herbicide from them using their seeds. So they've completely cornered this market. One of the common justifications that genetically modified organism companies and their apologists in the media and in Congress will be that they'll say that it's used to address world hunger. Now, I'm assuming in a crowd like this, I don't have to point out the cynicism of that justification, but there have been reports put together to debunk this. There was a report put together by 400 scientists and backed by over 58 governments that found that genetically modified crop yields were highly variable, and in some cases yields declined. So not only are they dangerous, but there's actually less food available in many cases in genetically modified crop fields. These studies also found that GMOs, this is a quote, GMOs have nothing to offer towards the goals of reducing hunger and poverty, improving nutrition, improving health and rural livelihoods, and facilitating social, environmental, and sustainability. In fact, GMOs divert money and resources from more safe, reliable, and appropriate technologies. Another study in 2008 by Friends of the Earth found that the majority of GM crops are not destined for hungry people in developing countries, but are typically used to feed animals, and we will get to that, of course, generate biofuels, produce highly processed food products, which are mainly for consumption in rich countries. They found, quote, GM crops have not increased food security for the world's poor. Now, Monsanto is no different than any other corporation in that its goals have nothing to do with protecting the environment or feeding the poor. They have two goals, which is profit and control, like every corporation. Monsanto is the world's leader in what we call biotechnology, the owner of 90% of the GMOs grown in the world, and more and more have bought up seed companies across the globe to push their patent seeds. This means that farmers, and I'm talking about smaller farmers, not large industrial corporate farmers, may not keep part of the crops to re-sow the following year, as farmers have done for centuries all across the globe. In the U.S. and Canada, for example, farmers have to sign a technology agreement which includes very clearly expressed a no-sowing requirement. So if they violate this patent, they are harassed by what's called the gene police and promptly sued by Monsanto. These transgenic crops have been found to be costly and must be purchased every year and do nothing but worsen small farmers' indebtedness, dependency, and vulnerability to hunger. As a result, over the past few years, 250,000 Indian farmers have committed suicide related directly to this situation. And coming up next is something that they call Terminator seeds. They claim they're not using them yet. Their official name is Gene Use Restriction Technology. If you look up G-U-R-T, you'll find that. These Terminator seeds are bio-designed to not reproduce, so that they don't even have to worry about the farmers possibly saving and re-sowing the following year. If you go to Monsanto's website, they claim they have the technology but haven't used it yet, and they're waiting for the right time to do so. Great Vandana Shiva sums it up pretty well with this quote here. She said, "Seed is the source of life and the first link in the food chain. Control over seed means control over our lives, our food, and our freedom. Corporations like Monsanto have created a seed emergency, an emergency through patents on seeds, seed monopolies, biopiracy, genetic engineering, and the creation of non-renewable sterile seeds," close quote. So in other words, days like today are awesome, but we need to be doing a lot more than this. We need more. We should be doing more than talking, more than listening, more than learning. We have to put this into practice constantly. We need to start making what I like to call radical food choices. Now, specifically related to GMOs, the first choice, as difficult as it may sound, would be to avoid buying them. And it's not, there are guides online. You can find them online. And if you know which products are primarily genetically modified, you could try to avoid them. And if you shop in stores like health food stores, they're more likely to sell products that are labeled. They voluntarily label non-GMO. There's also a movement to label them yourself. And I'm sure there's people here who have those labels on them, where it's very clearly explained in these labels what GMOs are, and we can just go in and do guerrilla labeling ourselves in stores all across the country. And I'm guessing that at the info desk there's going to be people here today that have that. But I think if you just Google the words label-EM yourself, you'll find some you could even print out as stickers. Collectively, we could create non-GMO seed banks, local swaps, seed bomb events. We could start or join a community supported agriculture initiative, CSA. But most of all, perhaps the ultimate individual act you can make against Monsanto is to grow your own food, your own organic, non-GMO, non-processed food everywhere, on your fire escapes, your balconies, your backyards, and so on. And what would be quite a challenge to the status quo would be to use your lawns, if anybody does own a lawn, to grow your food, because there is a movement towards food, not lawns, and it is part of the state apparatus to tell us that lawns must be a certain way, and you'll get fined if you don't grow exactly like the grass the way it's grown. As a result, the single most irrigated crop in the U.S. is lawn, and so instead of everybody having their own garden, we have 40 million acres of lawn from sea to overfish sea, and we spend $40 billion a year in this country maintaining those lawns. One-third of all residential water use in the U.S. goes to lawn, and it requires 10 times more chemicals per acre to maintain a lawn than it does in industrial farmland. So these are the type of connections we need to make, which brings us into those chemicals. You can't discuss Monsanto without discussing pesticides. We now produce pesticides at a rate 13,000 times faster than when Rachel Carson wrote the classic book Silent Spring in 1962. So it's had the opposite result. And these pesticides that we're growing 13,000 times faster, by the EPA's own admission, Environmental Protection Agency, hardly a radical group, 30% of insecticides, 60% of herbicides, and 90% of fungicides are carcinogenic, which means cancer-causing. Regardless, Americans spend $7 billion a year on 21,000 different types of pesticides. Now, one of the reasons that we've relinquished control, whether it's GMOs, pesticides, other chemicals, is that we trust the experts. And one of the reasons we trust the experts is because there's a scientifically fraudulent and morally indefensible institution called animal experimentation, which allegedly proves that all this stuff is safe. So I'm going to put out I'm going to segue a little bit into animals here and put out that if in a less speciesist society, even if it could be proved and it can't, that animal experimentation is something we can learn from, only a speciesist society could allow these animals to go through such cruelty. But the reality is, even if you didn't give a shit about the cruelty, it's fraudulent science. And this is what allows our planet to be completely poisoned. Consider that 65% of the grains grown go to feed animals. The vast majority of those grains are genetically modified. So when they kill these animals for food, you are now eating a genetically modified product that, again, is not labeled. So you can't avoid it in that sense either. 65% of the grains go to the animals that they are killing. So we could scream Monsanto all we want, but we need this context. There are 53 billion land animals killed every single year, and what we're eating is not labeled GMO. And when we were in Union Square, I was watching at the rally somebody standing there eating a pizza. Now I'm going to be really, really blunt. If you know this information and you're still eating the animals, at the very least it's denial. At the most, it is sheer hypocrisy. Simple as that. Which brings me to the most radical food choice of all. The vast majority of the food we all eat here involves GMOs. Yes, it involves indescribable animal cruelty. It involves exploited human labor. It involves a human health holocaust. It involves irreversible environmental devastation. And I'll get into that in a second. Which means that every time you order in a pizza after your demo, or go to McDonald's, or chow down on Ben and Jerry's because the owners are progressive, or feed factory-farmed animals to victims of climate change, you are voting with your meager dollars for everything I just said, including irreversible environmental devastation. The number one source of human-created greenhouse gases on the planet is the global animal byproducts industry. I would say that again. The number one source of human-created greenhouse gases on the planet is the global animal byproducts industry, factory farming, the meat and dairy-based diet. Other costs to the environment include, currently there are 7 billion tons of topsoil lost every single year, and in the U.S. alone, 75% of the original topsoil is gone. Without nutrient-rich topsoil, human life will vanish. But 85% of topsoil erosion is due to livestock raising and feed crops. They clear the fields either to raise the livestock that are killed to be fed as food, or to grow the feed crops, the genetically modified feed crops, to those animals. 200,000 acres of rainforest are destroyed every single day, every 24 hours, the majority of which for pastures and feed crops. Every time you eat a rainforest-sourced hamburger, you are responsible for 700 pounds of living matter being destroyed. That involves 20 to 30 plant species, 100 insect species, and dozens of reptiles, birds, and mammals. The land used to raise animals for food, and pardon me, I'm going to do that every single time, is 10 billion acres, 10 billion with a B. The UN has found that livestock production eats up 70% of all global agricultural land, and one-third of the planet's land surface goes to the animal industry. One-third. So let's recap. Almost all the food is genetically modified. Most of it is fed to the 53 billion doomed land animals that are eating up one-third of the planet's land surface in an industry that is the number one source of human-created greenhouse gases. So, needless to say, veganism and animal rights is a little bit more than tofu recipes. It's a little more than that. It's more even than barbarism, like veal crates, vivisection, battery cages, slaughterhouses, whaling ships, carriage horses, dogfight rings, fur farm zoo circuses, and rodeos. It directly or indirectly connects to corporate welfare, overfishing, species extinction, the healthcare crisis, habitat loss, immigration issues, workplace justice, deforestation, climate change, and GMOs. Most of all, if I'm speaking to a group of activists, perhaps even revolutionaries, going vegan is more than just occupying a boycott, changing your diet, or making a new lifestyle choice. It is the surrendering of a privilege. The privilege is called speciesism. And anytime you voluntarily surrender a privilege, it is an act of revolution. Therefore, the vegan animal rights lifestyle is part of a liberation movement. You're aiming for total liberation, recognizing that animals are not property, they are not products, and they are not commodities. So, Monsanto is far from the only corporation killing the planet via the food industry. Thank you. At your next sign-making party, you might want to consider Tyson Foods, the world's largest poultry and red meat provider. Maybe I can get a Tyson.
Tyson!
And Smithfield Foods, the world's largest pork producer. Smithfield?
Smithfield.
Cargill, the second largest meat processing plant in the U.S. and the second largest animal feed supplier in the world. Cargill? Cal-Maine, the largest egg producer in the U.S. I should repeat them, I guess. Okay. All right. You'll know this one. Nestle's. The world's largest producer of dairy products. McDonald's, the largest buyer of beef in the world. Second largest buyer of poultry. The first largest buyer of poultry, KFC. There we go. And we have a few new marches here. These are the economic connections. If I'm standing here looking at people involved in Occupy Wall Street, these are the connections to Wall Street. Every single day, the choices you're making of what you eat and what you wear is connected to the economic system that allegedly we're all trying to bring down and change. And consider right now, there is a free trade, so-called free trade agreement called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, being negotiated in secrecy, the TPP, right now. One of the primary movers behind the TPP is the global animal agribusiness. They want this, what's called NAFTA on steroids, passed. If it passes as we know it stands now, it will mean more GMOs, more climate change, more pollution, more destruction of rainforests for livestock feed, more diabetes, heart disease, and cancer in the global south, more outbreak of deadly diseases like bird flu and swine flu, and dig this, it means more countries across the planet will have to switch to factory farming in order to stay competitive. So these are the connections to Wall Street, and we can say f*** the TPP and f*** Wall Street too. And anyone still clinging to the deception of lesser evilism, consider this. Neither party gets it, neither party wants to get it, neither party will ever get it. Consider a man named Michael Taylor. Currently his position is the deputy commissioner for food at the FDA. That's Michael Taylor's job. He was appointed by Obama. He is also currently the vice president for public policy at Monsanto, which means his job, he's in charge of having GMOs put into the food supply. And Obama put him into the FDA. So we can say, f*** Obama and f*** the alleged two-party system while we're at it. The idea is we need to create change, and that change starts with an alternative vision. We need to have an entire system change. Let the dominant hierarchy drown in its own greed and hypocrisy and fear while we're using our energy and passion to create and occupy a whole new cultural model. So yeah, f*** Monsanto, f*** GMOs, but I'm going to give you reasons why you should say f*** the entire system, because we have reached the point of no return and minor changes are no longer enough. Say the entire system, because we have to recognize the big connections and stop acting like we're the last generation of humans. We must reimagine our relationship with the natural world, which is the source of our existence. And we recognize that mutual aid and cooperation aren't utopian. Mutual aid and cooperation are our last best chance. And we believe what Utah Phillips, the folk singer, once said, that the earth is not dying, it's being killed, and the people killing it have names and addresses. So on that note, we say to the 1%, if they won't act to protect all life on earth, we will, and we will do so by any means necessary. So thank you for listening. Peace and power to all people.
By any means necessary. Ending on a rather provocative quotation from his fellow radical, Malcolm X. That was Mickey Z in Washington Square last May 2013. His words are taken from a video by Wilton Vaught, lightly edited and censored by yours truly. You'll find more of Vaught's videos at www.othervoicesotherchoices.blogspot.com. And you will find an archive of nearly all New World Notes' shows at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. This is Kenneth Doust. Thank you for listening. You'll get to my non-carborundum. And if you're wondering what to do about the lawn, remember, crabgrass is nature's way of telling you to slow down. Ciao.